Just in terms of the cool factor, resurrecting a woolly mammoth would be pretty hard to beat. But there are more urgent issues facing life on Earth. There's a major study that came out just the other day showing that many ocean animals are on the brink of disappearing. And now many scientists believe we're facing a new mass extinction, what they call the sixth extinction. That's also the title of a new book from Elizabeth Colbert. She's a science writer at The New Yorker, and she stopped by our studio recently to break some bad news to Steve Paulson.
Something like a quarter of all mammals right now are threatened with extinction.
A quarter of all mammals?
Yes. It's a very, very high number, a very scary number. And one thing that I think, you know, really makes an impression on people or should make an impression on people is all of our very closest relatives are threatened with extinction.
You're talking about the other primates.
Imminently. Well, I'm talking about the other great apes. I'm talking about orangutans, gorillas, chimps. I'm talking about bonobos. So those are our very closest relatives, and they are all endangered, in some cases, just hanging on.
But it goes way beyond that. I mean, the projections are, what, a third of all sharks and rays likely to disappear? A fifth of all reptiles? A sixth of all birds?
Well, these are not just likely to disappear. I mean, these are already, you know, on the way to extinction. And the most, you know, threatened group of all right now is amphibians, actually. Something like 40% of amphibians are classified as in danger, and there's been a real spate of extinctions. Mm. There are just many, you know, fantastic frogs and toads that you cannot find anymore.
Oh, tell me about one of those species of frogs.
Sure. Well, the species that I begin my book with, the species is called the Panamanian golden frog. It's actually technically a toad. And it's a very, very beautiful animal. It's a very bright yellow, the color of sort of a New York City taxi cab. It's very poisonous, and they communicate with each other. They live near running water, so they don't hear very well, and they don't have a call. Many frogs call, but instead they sort of wave. So anyway, they're extinct in the wild now. You can only find them in a couple of zoos and in this special facility that was built for them in Panama, because what happened was that people realized that there was this disease that was passing through the rainforest, passing through Panama.
And this was recent, right?
It was quite recent that this happened. This was back in 2006. And it took a long time to figure out what was happening to amphibians in Central America, because one of the very weird things is that amphibians were disappearing. People were going to places that are as untouched as a place can be in the world in the 21st century, and finding that frogs that they had been monitoring for, you know, years were suddenly gone.
And so this is not a case of humans clearing the rainforest and the amphibians disappearing.
Exactly. So there was a lot of controversy. There was a lot of head scratching. And eventually people figured out that a fungal disease was passing through, and you could watch that disease move. But what happened was, before they could build this facility, they started to notice that frogs were dying. And so literally, these frogs ended up being put up in a hotel.
The way you talk about this, it's almost as if the scientists who are dedicated to trying to save these species, they're setting up these little, what are the equivalent of Noah's Arks? You know, these little repositories of trying
absolutely.
To get a few breeding animals that can carry on the species.
Yes, and more species. And I can go down a list of animals I have seen, you know, personally, that are one of, let's say, there's 100 left in the world, there's 200 left. And, you know, one of the questions that comes up in that, whether there's ever any possibility that they can repopulate the wild, is a very, very open question.
So we've already talked about the cause of at least a certain class of species that are going extinct, this fungus that is, is wiping out a lot of frog populations, for instance. What are other causes of extinction?
Well, this fungal disease is emblematic of a bigger problem, which is that we're moving species around the world. So that fungus was probably moved around the world, you know, by people.
Inadvertently.
And now it's everywhere. And you hear about this all the time, right? You know, there are zebra mussels, there are Asian carp, all these things that could potentially wipe out native species. So that's one driver of extinction, bringing together things that are deadly for each other.
What about climate change? Is that having much of an impact on extinction rates?
Well, climate change is the big looming threat. We can certainly see a lot of species that are on the move. So if the climate's warming, you need to move either to a higher latitude or a higher elevation to try to, you know, keep in your climate mm-hmm. range.
Now, one of the revelations I had reading your book was the impact that climate change is having on oceans. I mean, with these greater levels of carbon dioxide, it's having a huge effect, especially on coral reefs.
Yeah, I think one of the great underreported stories of our time, really, to be frank, is what's happening to the oceans. And all you really need to understand this phenomenon is that when you pump a lot of CO2 into the air, as we're doing, a lot of it ends up very quickly getting dissolved in the upper layers of the ocean. And when CO2 dissolves in water, it forms an acid, carbonic acid. The ocean is becoming more acidified.
So what happens then to species in the ocean?
Any number of things could happen, right? The one that is pretty predictable, it becomes more difficult for any animal that builds a shell or an external skeleton out of calcium carbonate. So corals, any coral reef, all they're doing is, you know, assembling calcium carbonate. That is what a coral reef is. It's a lot of calcium carbonate. And there are very, very few scientists who say that, you know, if we continue to dump CO2 into the air and effectively into the water, that coral reefs will live out this century, okay?
Wow. You mean all the coral reefs in the world could disappear this century?
Yes. And I think people need really to be aware of that.
And a coral reef has one of the richest collections of biodiversity in the world, right?
Absolutely. There's something called the rainforests of the oceans. And you know, in the process of reporting that book, I went to both a rainforest, mm-hmm. the Amazon rainforest, and to the Great Barrier Reef.
In Australia.
Yeah. And I can tell you that the amount of life and the abundance of life and the diversity of life that you see on the Great Barrier Reef is really unequaled anywhere in the world. It is so extraordinary. You feel like you're in a dream landscape.
Tell me, you have this great description of what it was like to go there, and especially walking around at night on a little island on the Great Barrier Reef, which sounds like an amazing experience.
Yeah, I went to this little tiny island called One Tree Island, which it was just this bit of reef that had sort of been thrown up above the waterline by a big, big storm a couple thousand years ago. So the scientists I was with were doing an experiment that required you to walk out about a mile on the reef. You could only do it at low tide, otherwise you'd drown. And we would go out in the middle of the night. I would go out with them sometimes, and it was just a spectacular, sometimes rather hair-raising experience. And life, even in the pitch black, where you only have a flashlight beam in front of you, is extraordinary. You know, we would see octopuses and these amazing giant clams that live in the Great Barrier Reef.
You said you sort of had to, like, step over the clams, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, when I say giant, I mean giant. They're the size of not quite a bicycle tire, but very, very big.
Wow. So you were just walking along and seeing this whole incredible array of big animals below you.
Yes. And when you go out during, you know, we would go snorkeling sometimes when the scientists weren't working, when it was high tide. That is when you really see, you know, you just are looking down onto the reef and the assemblage of fish, just the extraordinary shapes and colors, and then followed by tuna, who are followed by sharks and rays, these incredibly very graceful, beautiful manta rays.
So did working in this project, writing this book, did this leave you really depressed?
It had two impacts simultaneously. To have more and more appreciation for the extraordinariness of life on Earth and the remarkable ways that so many different species have found to survive. And on the other hand, an extraordinary sadness. It's just in sort of unspeakable losses that's happening that will be definitely the most lasting legacy of humanity. Certainly, if we're going to do anything about it, we certainly need to be aware of it.
Elizabeth Colbert is a staff writer at The New Yorker. She talked with Steve about her book, The Sixth Extinction.